Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast exists because of the paid subscribers at decodingtv.com. To support the show and get ad-free episodes and early access to episodes, become a paid subscriber at decodingtv.com. Thanks to everyone at Decoding TV who makes this podcast possible.
Once upon a time, there was a milkman. Charming, devilishly handsome, you know the type. Well, he was an outsider. Then one day, a miracle happened. He was invited inside. For no reason. Other than to have a beer with a mysterious, mildly intimidating little white lady. Ta-da.
Fair enough. We get a lot of milkmen coming around here, but none have come more than twice. You, on the other hand, have come dozens of times. You're consistent, reliable. You got a solid ass.
Boom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Streaming, a Decoding TV podcast. I am David Chen.
I'm Patrick Klopik.
Each week, This Week in Streaming will cover a show that's new and interesting in the world of streaming. We'll tell you if it's worth watching, and if it is, we'll review and spoil and discuss the entire season of the show. Today, we're going to be discussing the first five episodes of Twisted Metal, a new streaming TV series that's available right now on Peacock. It was developed by Rhett Reese, Paul Wernick, and Michael Jonathan Smith. If some of those names sound familiar, it's because they were some of the folks that worked on Deadpool as well as Zombieland. You can find more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Email us at decodingtv@gmail.com. Find us on YouTube, Twitter, Threads, Instagram, TikTok, at decodingtv. And I want to let people know what the schedule is. So today on the podcast, we're going to give you our overall thoughts on Twisted Metal and then go into some amount of detail on the first five episodes of the show, covering the first five episodes of the show. Now, as we will soon discuss, five episodes is probably more than enough for most people to watch of this show. There's probably no need to cover more than five episodes, one might argue. And when I voiced this possibility to Patrick Klepek, Patrick said, I need to finish what I start, David Chen. And so we are going to be covering the first five episodes on today's podcast. And then next week, we'll be covering the final five episodes of the first season. It's not too bad. You know, each episode's only 30 minutes long. So it's like the whole thing's 5 hours long. And I knew I would have fun talking about it with Patrick Klepek. So here we are talking about the first five episodes of Twisted Metal, streaming right now on Peacock. So before we get into detail about what is actually going on with this show, what the plot of the show is, let's start by talking about overall thoughts. Patrick Klepek, what did you think of Twisted Metal? And do you think people should watch it?
I knew I was going to have to watch some amount of this show, regardless of where the critical consensus or personal me, Patrick consensus, fell on it. Twisted Metal is a franchise that I have a long, deep history with. It is one of those games, like the first and second games, especially on the original PlayStation, that I spent just an enormous amount of time with my brother, one of my best friends. Like, I can't tell you specific stories about what we did. I just know when I think about that game, I get like a special feeling inside because of the amount of time that was spent with people who are important to me in my life playing this game about cars shooting rockets at one another. But it, like, you know, it came at that age where you can have the sort of formative memories and emotional attachments to media, even if you can't even necessarily articulate what was it about that thing that you were so attracted to, which is sort of the thing that comes as you get older and sort of can kind of bridge that gap intellectually with the work that you're engaged with. And so
Let's pause there for a moment, right? Let's just talk a little bit about that. So I'm actually in the same boat, spent a lot of time playing Twisted Metal on PlayStation 1, but the real revelation to me was playing Twisted Metal Black, which I believe came out in 2001 on PlayStation 2. I spent, I'm going to say conservatively, 50 hours playing Twisted Metal Black. Like, I loved that game, and it holds a very special place in my heart. If you've never played Twisted Metal, basically what it is, it's like, I'll describe it as like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter, but instead of people fighting, it's cars that are tricked out with a bunch of weapons on them. So you can play as different kinds of characters, and they have different cars, and the cars have like different weapons. So like one car might have rockets, or one car might throw out bombs, or one car might shoot out electricity, right? And so each car has special powers, and you basically run around and you blow other people up using the cars. Like that, that is most of the game, right? And so it sounds like for you and me, Patrick, this is a very formative video game, one that holds a special place in our hearts, and one who we're probably somewhat interested to see how it'll be adapted into a TV show.
Well, right, because it is Twisted Metal is a franchise in the world of video games. You're right; is an offshoot of fighting games. You know, this subgenre was popular enough at the time that it had its own subgenre called vehicular combat. And so you had games like Twisted Metal, Vigilante 8, and other games that if this conversation goes long enough, maybe they'll come back to me. But there were enough of games that like...
I'll name a few. Carmageddon.
There you go.
Burnout, you know, like a bunch of these kinds of shit. Games I love. I played, you know, a lot of these games. Love these games. So
and
Destruction
and,
Derby, you know.
Yep. Yeah. Oh my God, Destruction Derby 1 and 2. Like so much fun. And... what was so fun about them was not just playing, you know, against like your friends or your siblings, but one of the things I used to love to do was to bring home a new Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter or a Twisted Metal. And the structure of these games was, hey, you're going to go through kind of like each of these combat arenas with a different character. And at the end, you're going to get a slightly different ending. And it's just a little like cutscene or computer generated scene. And this was true of Mortal Kombat. It was true of Tekken. Like it was kind of, especially as narrative was becoming, you know, we still be kind of figured out like, what does it mean for games to have narrative? How do we fit narrative into games that don't necessarily glom on like really naturally? And I loved just ticking through the character boxes and like, all right, well, I beat it with Spectre. Great. Now I'm going to beat it with Sweet Tooth. Great. Now I'm going to beat it with like, you know, like all these other wild characters in Twisted Metal or any of these like fighting games that I love to just rent from the video store. And so my fondness for the franchise in some ways is connected to that experience of like going through all these characters and seeing their ending. But I would not argue that the fond memories are really tied up in like a fondness for the story, world, characters, like, gosh, I cannot wait to see what they do with that live action. Like I enjoyed the stories in like for what they were, but it wasn't a franchise that was sitting on a shelf going, I just, you know, they're making everything into a movie or TV show these days. What I need is to find out how are they going to adapt the guy with two wheels on his arms. And like, that's like the vehicle that he goes around with. And what they did was like, we're just not going to adapt any of those parts of the franchise because I don't think maybe they don't have the budget or they in the more grounded take that they have gone with this version of Twisted Metal that just those more fantastical elements, which are a huge part of Twisted Metal, pretty unarguably, at least in the five episodes we've seen, do not seem to be part of what they're going for here.
Right. Like the idea is that there was this guy, Calypso, who hosted this big tournament where people could come and fight with their tricked out cars. And if you did so, you would get like any wish that you want fulfilled.
Yes. Basically.
Like that's kind of the plot. So the new series, Twisted Metal, doesn't really do any of that. It doesn't really involve any of that. The one thing it feels like they kept is, or two things they feel like they kept, post-apocalyptic vehicular combat. Those are the two elements they kept. Everything else is kind of new and invented. But yeah, Patrick, putting that aside, great callback to the idea that like, I remember wanting to beat the game with every single one of those characters so you could figure out like what all of their endings were. That was a cool thing. But putting aside the game, what do you think of the show? Is this something that people should watch?
It's this show, at least so far, lives and dies on how you respond to the... what I found to be like incredible charm of Anthony Mackie, right? Like this is a character, this is an actor who we like broadly know as, you know, Falcon from like the Marvel movies. And he's been in other things, but I think if you were to, every time you see a picture of him, I think most people are going to think, oh, right, that's Falcon in the Marvel stuff. And so here,
and soon Captain America.
Exactly. And like, but even then that is him not necessarily being typecast, but like that is the role or like adjacent role that he's become associated with. And I don't think people have had a chance to see him in much else. And I haven't had a chance to see him in much else. And so this show hinges on how are you going to respond to the like charm offensive that he is deploying in the show. And what I'll say is like, I responded extremely positively. Like, I think he is very funny and enjoyable to watch in the show. And because it's 30 minutes, it hangs around just enough that you get the, like, it gives me the concentrated blast that I want. And that even for whatever missteps there are in the show and like how thin a lot of the plotting, you know, for what there is might be, like between him and his quips and like the way he bounces off the world. And then like the actor playing Officer Stone is what Thomas Hayden Church, right?
Correct.
And like just chewing scenery, just like hum, 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 like just having a blast with a role that has very, very little to it, but is just meant to be like this hard ass jerk. And I think he, you know, does that exceptionally well. I have found it to be charming. I don't think there's a ton of depth here. And I haven't gotten the sense that in the back half that's going to change, you know, but if you're being curious to see how they handle a video game adaptation is not enough to recommend watching an entire series. And so I can't give that full throated endorsement, but I don't think it's a waste of your time. And I do think for the kind of show that can just be a popcorn show, like, hey, like, this is like, it's enjoyable, it's short, it's to the point, like your eyes and your ears and your heart are going to have a little fun for 30 minutes. I think this show does accomplish that pretty well. It's not a show that I'll probably remember a year from now, but in terms of a show that like I just want to sit down. I don't have time for the hour long thing. And then your options for 30 minute shows are kind of limited. And like, so I'm very attracted to shows that can like sit within that small time window. And especially if you're looking for something that can be that easy sort of kind of snackable show, I do think this falls into that quite well.
That is a pretty charitable review of the show, I got to say, Patrick Klebeck.
Yeah, I've gotten the sense that you have not found it as charming as I have.
Well, I am fascinated by this show because on the one hand, I think the show is actually overall pretty terrible. Like, if you were to show people like a 1 minute clip from the show, they would be like, "That looks awful."
Well, so David, they did do that, which was at Summer Games Fest. I believe it was at Jeff. I don't know which showcase it was at.
I remember Will Arnett filmed a hostage video where he looked like he was giving proof of life and talked about the show.
And then they showed a clip from the kind of fight scene between Anthony Mackie and Will Arnett voicing Sweet Tooth. And it is one of the all it's essentially that the part of the back and forth where they go back about the 90s hit Thong Song. It was atrocious. I mean, it was I cannot believe someone signed off on like, yes, out of context. Like, this is the clip we should share with the world. Whereas like the clip you put into this show, however you feel about it, was like thousands, exponentially better, at least like telling you the kind of tone and humor that it's going for on a moment to moment basis. And so anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, no worries. So I think if you as you said, as we have seen in real life, if you show people clips of the show out of context, it is pretty terrible. It has a budget that is not in proportion with the ambition of the show.
Yeah.
It feels very low budget, and they are trying to do some really big things. I would describe a lot of the aesthetics of this show as, and this is not meant to be like a slam, okay? But like, because I have a deep respect for what I'm about to say, but it looks very, like, I would describe its aesthetics as very YouTube-esque. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is, there's a lot of great work that gets done on YouTube, but it often feels like they're stealing shots from a real life location. You know, like there's limits to the kinds of shots they can get because they're doing it guerrilla style and they don't have that big of a budget and so on. That's a lot of YouTube videos look like that. And this TV show that's streaming on Peacock kind of looks like that, in my opinion. The dialogue and tone of the show, I would say, is something that feels targeted towards people who were like high schoolers from the 90s, I think, right? Like, basically, like, if you are a high schooler in the 90s and you watch the show, you'd be like, rad, dude, that's awesome, love that. You know, like, the tone.
What are you trying to say about people who are in high school in the 90s?
First of all, I think they're the people that wrote this show. But also, I think that there's this kind of very edgelord vibe to it of like, we're trying, you know, oh wow, look, we're showing farts and vomits and, you know, like all this stuff of like all this bodily humor and all this like stuff that I don't find particularly clever. And you know, that kind of makes up a lot of the show. Now, why did I still agree to watch a show with you and review it on Decoding TV despite all that stuff? The answer is, I still find the show to be strangely compelling because, first of all, as you said, Anthony Mackie's in the show. And hey, it's fun to watch Anthony Mackie cut loose.
Yeah.
Okay. Most of the stuff we see Anthony Mackie in, he is pretty serious. Okay. Even in the Avengers movies, he is pretty serious guy. A lot of dramatic stuff. He was in The Hurt Locker, very serious movie. And watching him cut loose and have a blast, it's like, I don't even think I've ever seen Anthony Mackie in this context before. So that in and of itself is offering you something. There's some things that are like, just as I compared this streaming show to a lot of YouTube videos, there's ingenuity in YouTube videos. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's like, oh wow, they made this half city block look like it was a, you know, nuclear attack, right? Like, and there's something strangely compelling about watching people seemingly work with a very low budget to try to make this vast, expansive post-apocalyptic world that I'm just like, huh, that's kind of cool. Like, it's not convincing, but it's like, oh, I appreciate the ingenuity and like what they're trying to do, like how they're achieving what they're trying to do, or how they're trying to achieve it, at least, their goals. And so I still find it like weirdly compelling. And then also, finally, I would say a bunch of the vehicular combat stuff is actually pretty decent. Like, whenever there's vehicular combat in general, it looks pretty good. So, pretty mixed bag for me, Patrick. And overall, I would not recommend the show to most people. Like, I think most people will not like Twisted Metal. And in fact, I would feel ashamed to recommend it to them because I would be like, if you think this is like what I find funny, you know, that makes me look bad a little bit.
Wow. Black, really? All right. So we got to see through Secret Invasion, Patrick, like, so glad to have you keep doing so this. And then we're going to do a very Dave show. We're going to do Full Circle. And then we're gonna like, all right, Patrick, like, I guess we could do Twisted Metal. And it's like, well, so we're doing Twisted Metal. But if anyone thinks this reflects upon me, I mean, the one thing I'll say.
Patrick, your sense of humor is bad and you should feel bad. That's kind of my point.
The thing I would say is that I think, you know, part of the difficulty with a lot of television shows these days, and like a show like Full Circle that we just did, is you kind of need to watch the whole thing to have a good sense of what it is and like what it's trying to accomplish. And so, at least here, right? Like, if you think you're going to vibe with it at all, even if you don't find a lot of the story, world building, characters, episodic structure compelling, but maybe you just like Anthony Mackie, like, I wonder if that could be enough to just have something I have on. You can just watch the first episode, 30 minutes. Like, if nothing there resonates, like, it's not as though it's going to change. Like, because the show is deliberately, like, almost level based, like almost, you know, it is like going
pure. It's very episodic. It's very, and that's another thing that's a strength of a show is,
yes,
it's very episodic. So it's like each episode tells like a fairly self-contained story of like, we're going to visit this place and like what happens when we visit this place. And then the next episode, we visit a different place and other stuff. So it's very, I like the structure of the episodes is very like respects the format of TV. So, but yes, you could watch the first 30 minutes and then make your decision. I believe the first 30 minutes available for free, actually. So so you can check that out and then decide whether you're going to watch the show or not. But I'll just say, Patrick, I think it's very like Deadpool-esque humor. Like, if you like the humor in Deadpool, you know, you'll like the humor in Twisted Metal, but it's like very like try hard edgelord kind of humor.
I would go with try hard more than edgelord. Like when I think of edgelord, I think that, you know, I think more South Park, I think more like pushing up against like norms of humor in mm-hmm. terms of like, mm-hmm.
So the scene when, this old guy, is trying to have sex with what he thinks is Anthony Mackie's corpse. that's just, you know,
that's just
edgelord.
We're just yucking it up. I would just say, broadly speaking, I know, I guess I just more so say like edgelord, especially these days, was just like, like, oh man, really pushing the boundaries of like racial humor and things like that. And I was like, I think this is like falls. You're right. Like that one is maybe an outlier, but I think this show is broadly more like, yes, like farts and blood and slapstick being like pushed to a certain edge more so than it is like pushing the boundaries of like what society is going to accept as funny. And like, that's just a little more of what I associate like these days with edgelore. And this is more in that slapstick vein. And also just like attempting a million things. Because Anthony Mackie just does not stop talking. That's a bit in the show.
Right.
And the show itself, by like sheer momentum of story and like character banter, like is throwing a lot out at you. And it sounds like with you, like if a bunch of it's not landing, it does feel like someone's just yelling in your face with a bunch of things that you don't like. And the ratio of how much that is going to land is going to determine a lot of like your ability to move forward in the show and find something out of it.
Yeah, and the thing for me is, like, worst case scenario, it's, like, a thing you leave on, like, you know, I have shows I watch while I'm working out, you know, this is a great working out show, because it doesn't demand very much, nor does it deliver that much, but it's like, hey, there's some fun, and there's some really talented actors. Hey, if you like Thomas Hayden Church, I remember when Spider-Man 3 came out, people were like, oh my gosh, Thomas Hayden Church is incredible, you know, like, a lot of respect for Thomas Hayden Church out there, here's a thing you can watch him in, you know? So there's a bunch of weird decisions in the show that I want to talk with you about as we get into the plot details. But overall, I didn't hate it, Patrick. Didn't hate it. Didn't love it. Found it to be a deeply mixed bag. And it's just a deeply weird, weird show. So,
you know, when you have to say over and over, I didn't hate it. I believe you, David. You didn't hate it. Like, you know, I definitely didn't hate it.
Exactly. Nor do I hate anyone who likes it. So.
Definitely not. Definitely not. 100% not.
100%. 100% not. All right. Well, those are our overall thoughts on the first five episodes of Twisted Metal.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, let's talk about what actually happens in the show. Now, before we actually do the plot summary, I did want to play you a clip, which I meant to grab this before we started talking, but I think I successfully grabbed it while we were talking.
Ooh.
And this is a clip from Sweet Tooth's backstory in the original Twisted Metal game.
Wow.
Or one of the original Twisted Metal games. And I remember like Sweet Tooth in the clown guy in the video games was a serial killer. And I remember his stuff literally giving me nightmares. Like the backstory was like, literally giving me that, because it's like back then when I was a kid, the idea of like an amoral killer is like a very frightening thought. Like, oh, there's someone out there who doesn't believe in right and wrong. Like, that's very scary. So here's Sweet Tooth. I just want to play a clip. This is Sweet Tooth talking about one of the people who got away and he was not able to successfully kill.
There was a time right after she escaped. that I almost caught her. I could sense where she was. Her fear. It was so ripe. This would be fun.
Anyway, you kind of get
Christ.
A I know it's upsetting, right?
That's what I was playing when Twisted Metal come out.
That's like upsetting today as an adult. Yeah, to what, you know?
I think it's more upsetting because I don't think they would do it that hard today. I mean,
today, so, right?
Well, Twisted Metal 1 and 2 were aimed at they had an edge to them, but it was kind of all ages. Whereas Twisted Metal Black is where they leaned harder into we're really specifically targeting like teenagers.
I think
and
it
adults.
Was rated M for mature, and I remember being like, oh, like this is exciting. I'm playing a rated M game, you know, like ooh, this is I'm a hard edged gamer, you know. But I play that because that's like the biggest memory I have of Twisted Metal, Patrick, is like that tone, that incredibly dark tone.
And there was a lot of that because the whole concept was, you know, yes, Calypso is going to grant you your wish, but, you know, it's a twisted wish. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, yeah, nothing
it's like
ever
a
goes.
It's like a monkey's paw type thing.
It is, like Calypso is not there to, you know, it is there to, you'll get your wish, but not in the way that you expect. And yeah, like Twisted Metal 1 drops in 95. Twisted Metal 2 drops very soon after in 96. Back in an era where a game could be a success and come out. Twisted Metal 1 comes out November 5th, 1995. Twisted Metal 2 comes out October 31st, 1996.
Less than a year.
Yeah. Unthinkable right. These days. But I mean,
these days you get the launch of a game and then the rest of the game.
Yeah, your season pass.
Season pass less than a year, right? That's what it is today, right? So anyway, I play that because like I was thinking when I think of Twisted Metal, I'm like, oh, that's my memory of it. Mm-hmm. And I will just say Twisted Metal the show is virtually nothing like, or it's certainly not that dark. It kind of, it has a dark edge to it, but I mostly don't take any of this particularly seriously. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I don't think the show is taking it very seriously. So,
I'm not sure you could do the show with, like, if you think of the split in tone between 1 and 2 and then Black, in which they're like very different approaches to the same material, in which I would argue Twisted Metal 1 and 2 are far more arcadey and comedic. And have an edge to them, but it is not overly serious. And Black is when it gets not serious, but like it gets darker. Like yeah. it is more. I would be shocked if that clip you just played was not from Twisted Metal Black. But again, obviously, it's been ages since I've played these games thoroughly, and this show definitely adopts more of the tone of 1 and 2 than it does right. does Black.
I'll just say here's a good illustration. I was never scared watching Twisted Metal, the streaming show, right?
Like, not for a single
moment. Whereas I was scared listening to that clip just now.
You know, like, that depiction of Sweet Tooth is much scarier than, and also they're not trying. Like, there's nothing that is even, it is not as though the show is failing to be scary. Sweet Tooth is not depicted. Sweet Tooth is depicted as intimidating.
They're not even trying to do anything like that.
Right.
But like me, I was scared not only of the concept of Sweet Tooth, but I was also scared of the fact that someone thought that up. Mm-hmm, you know, like, mm-hmm, it was mm-hmm. like, oh wow, there's people on Earth. That was when I first saw it. There's people on Earth that like thought that up, you know, like that's really messed up. Okay. Anyway, let's talk about what happens to the show. It's the post-apocalypse and all major cities have erected walls to keep out lawless criminals. Outside the walls, John Doe, played by Anthony Mackie, is a milkman who makes deliveries from outpost to outpost and is exceedingly good at his job. After making a delivery to New San Francisco, John gets an offer from Mayor Nev Campbell to pick up a package in New Chicago in return for citizenship. John sets out on his quest and joins up with a woman named Quiet, played by Stephanie Beatrice, who herself is on a quest for vengeance because her brother was murdered by a security guard turned self-appointed head of the police, Officer Stone, who's played by Thomas Hayden Church. Officer Stone has created many outposts, including one at the Hoover Dam, and is busy recruiting people for his cause. Along the way, John and Quiet bump into a colorful cast of characters, such as Sweet Tooth, a psychopathic killer clown, and a convoy of survivors that ride in a truck that's always in motion. As the fifth episode ends, Quiet and John have seemingly defeated Officer Stone via a car battle, and Sweet Tooth has decided to go on a killing spree, liberating the people who Officer Stone has kept captive. So that's what's happened in the show thus far. Patrick Klepek, let's start with this. You know, we've touched upon this a few times, but I do notice that sometimes when they make an adaptation based off of these video games that are like the storyline in the video game is about a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
People who are writing these things always feel the need to not have a tournament. Like Street Fighter being a great example, the Raul Julia, Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, right? Like Street Fighter is a street fighting tournament. It's in the name of the video game, right? And then it's like, oh, Guile is like this U.S. Special Forces guy, and we need to have this whole political intrigue. Similarly, I watched Twisted Metal, the TV show, because I was like, oh, wow, maybe they're going to have some big tournament of some kind where we see big cars go up against each other. I guess that wasn't interesting enough for them, because not only is that not the main focus, I don't even think, as of five episodes, there's nothing even of the sort that's going to happen in the show.
The most recent Mortal Kombat reboot like also eschews like any sort of tournament structure for
I think there is a tournament in the new Mortal Kombat, the 2021 film.
Yeah, but like there's not the battle between realms, which is the whole like which is the like the core concept of Mortal Kombat. There are one-on-one fights that happen towards the end as everyone's trying to unlock their inner Mortal Kombat energy or whatever they like trying to like give an explanation for why people can do superpowers.
But it's not structured like a tournament. It's not like, hey, fight one, fight two, which is it the Paul W.S. Anderson film did? Like they did do that, if I recall correctly.
They go to an island and there is the superior movie goes to an island and has a tournament and has a big practical gore. Oh, if anyone is going to sit here and tell me that the new Mortal Kombat is better than the older Mortal Kombat, I will not have it.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't know if I agree with you there, but that'll be a duel for another day, Patrick.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So yeah. I am curious, you know, you have covered pop culture as well as video games, obviously, for your day job at Remap. What do you think? I guess people just don't think tournaments are that interesting, huh? Like, what do you think is up? Do you think it's more narratively interesting the path they chose than having some kind of tournament?
I think part of the answer to that question is trying to unpack where are the filmmakers, the showrunners, I guess, in this case, coming from in terms of the material. Do you get the sense that they are the only way we could get our idea made was to hitch a ride on this franchise, because you're more likely to get an existing IP with however loose a narrative connection approved? Or is like, hey, we've looked at this game and this seems like a better vehicle to deliver like the story we want to tell.
Terrible.
In it. And I haven't read any interviews with the, you know, with the folks behind this to know where they're coming from. The game or the show, it's a bad vibe sometimes when you can see the show going out of its way to throw Easter eggs, like obvious, like, huh? Like, so there's a sequence like in the opening vehicle sequence, like the Twisted Metal box, like goes on, onto the car. And
the show exists in a universe where the Twisted Metal video game exists, basically.
Right. And it's like a long shot of like that box there. There's another sequence later in the show where Evelyn, I think is the name of his car. And he says like an input sequence, like L1 up, down, which is, I believe, to the code to get invincibility in Twisted Metal, like one of the cheat codes, and like stuff like that, gives me pause. And it's like, oh, did like they do a pass on the show? And it's like, oh, like are the fan? Like, do we put in enough for the fans here? Like, okay, let's put in these very, so I just watching the show, I can't quite figure out where the people making it land with the material, and is the distance from like the structure of a tournament, the distance from the really, frankly, like supernatural elements that like really like There's a ghost character. Like, I forget the character in Twisted Metal. But like, yeah, he's a ghost rider.
There's a character from Hell in the.
He's
game.
A Ghost Rider equivalent. Yeah. Like, yeah. it's just doing Ghost Rider from Marvel Comics, and so far, you know, none of that. So, like, that's me trying to navigate, like, where, especially as someone that, you know, liked the original series, but doesn't feel like, gee, if they don't adapt Twisted Metal right, I'm going to be shaking my fist at them. It's more just like, why bother, right? Like, if you're like, why even bother to do this? Especially because these creators, like, they're very successful. They probably didn't have to make this to make ends meet. And so they've had, like, you know, between Zombieland and, like, I mean, like, they can probably find projects. And so doing Twisted Metal seems like it comes out of a desire to want to do a Twisted Metal show. And I don't even necessarily disagree with, like, the beginning sort of grounded approach. And what I hope is that what it's building towards is, like, hey, can we get buy-in from the audience on, like, a character level, on some sort of grounded approach, which then opens the door for the show to get stranger and introduce more of those elements of the show. Because, like, I have found myself missing that. And I think it's tied up in this question of the tournament. It's tied up in this question of, like, where are the more supernatural or, like, over the top elements of the original games. And I think that is, like, kind of all tied up my complicated feelings about how they chose to frame this adaptation. I understand, like, it's a very simple narrative, right? Like, get to place, like, go get thing. Like, I get it. And that then fits very nicely with their episodic framework, but I'm with you in wondering why we had to ditch that framework. And I don't quite settle on where I come from in why they did it. And I feel like maybe that's a question that's answered a little more by the end of the show.
Yeah, I think you are correct to point out that there's many shows that get made today or many movies that get made today because of their association with pre-existing IP. There was a great article in the New Yorker about Barbie and how there's, like, dozens of projects in play at Mattel. We're going to see a Polly Pocket movie, probably. We're going to see a Magic 8-Ball movie, probably. We're going to see, you know, all these movies based on, like, Uno movie, probably. and they are reviewing scripts and trying to figure out, like, what's the right fit. And a lot of the movies sound like, oh, it was a cool idea they had, and they just connected it to Chutes and Ladders because... because they figured they could fit a ladder into the story, you know, like, as opposed to, like, you know, they really had a passion for the material. And I do think there's a little bit of that going on. I do wonder how much of that's going on, where, like, it's like, yeah, they wanted to tell a story. Like, they wanted this to be an Anthony Mackie haha vehicle, where, you know, he gets to hang out and do fun things and blow people up. And they kind of just shoved it into this Twisted Metal pre-existing IP, thinking that they would get the Dave Chens and the Patrick Klepiks of the world to turn out. Who, like, hey, I remember that from my childhood. Oh, a show right. that is basically nothing like what I remember. I'm still going to watch it and talk about it on my podcast. They got
I will say they get over a pretty... So the Mortal Kombat reboot, one of the problems that I had with it was those filmmakers did seem like they understood the material and were trying to navigate their way through it. And I actually spoke to the screenwriter at one point before that movie came out. And, like, I definitely bought it. I was like, hey, the screenwriter gets it, understands the material. But one of the core problems I had with that was their wholesale invention of a brand new main character to be this audience surrogate to get them into the world. And one of my core problems with that adaptation was, like, I just don't think that worked at all. Like, the main character is I think it's Cole is the main character.
Yeah, that wasn't great.
It just didn't work at all. And, like, constantly Cole's on screen and I'm wondering, instead, like, when Cole is not on screen, instead of wondering where is Cole, I'm like, thank God Cole is not on screen. It's like an invert.
It's true. He was the least interesting character. That was an unfortunate part of it. But yeah.
And so, like, what's fascinating about this adaptation is, broadly speaking, absent Sweet Tooth, we don't really have, like, the core characters that you would associate with Twisted Metal. Now, granted, Sweet Tooth is the one that's on all the box arts. Like, if there is a character of Twisted Metal, it is Sweet Tooth. And there are references and Easter eggs to, like, these other characters throughout. But it does wholesale invent a main character. And maybe the franchise is able to get away with that a little more because, again, of the, like, Sweet Tooth's prominence. But it does kind of clear that bar that Mortal Kombat didn't for me, where it's like, all right, I buy this character. I'm not upset that it isn't some other character that would have been more interesting from that world. And I buy this as a, I keep wanting to say vehicle. As an entryway into the Twisted Metal universe, whatever that is. And that's part of what I just don't even know what this series is. I was like, what is this universe? Like, how broad is it? Because we're given like a very kind of narrow glimpse into it on an episode by episode basis.
I would agree with you that John Doe is a relatively cool character. Like, he's a character that feels like he's worthy of being the main character of the show, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Twisted Metal like character list, and he was not one of the original characters as far as I could tell. But man, there were some wild characters, Patrick. There was this guy, yeah. Remember there was a character called Axel, and he was
with the two wheels, right?
Yeah, yes. Just a guy who's trapped between two wheels.
Come on, build that. And put he has that like, on a set.
He has like rockets on his shoulders. Anyway, yes. Okay, such a cool idea. Okay. So there are some really interesting decisions that the show makes that I want to talk to you about. First of all, Will Arnett plays the voice of Sweet Tooth, but the body of Sweet Tooth, who wears a clown mask at all times, is played by Samoa Joe, the American professional wrestler and actor. And I have to say, I feel deeply ambivalent about this because on the one hand, when I hear Will Arnett's voice, my brain thinks that's Will Arnett's voice coming out of this other guy's body.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if I didn't know who Will Arnett was, I feel like I would find this performance very convincing. I think Samoa Joe is doing a great job. Like, it's a great physical performance where he's matching his body motions to what Will Arnett's saying. And I think he's actually doing a really good job. What do you think?
I would love to see some sort of behind the scenes, like what's happening right on set.
My guess is they recorded Will Arnett's voice and they're playing it back. And then Samoa Joe's reenacting.
However they did it, it would be fascinating to see how they... Yeah. They did that in production, and then like matched that in post. But yeah, I'm with you. It is one of those instances in which, for I think me personally, and also for you, like the moments where I can't quite tell it's Will Arnett, where like the voice just gets kind of buried in like the sound mixing and alteration that they're doing, because it's not just purely his voice. Like they're doing alterations to it to kind of match this bigger character. Like that's when I find the performance working for me the most. But because I know who Will Arnett is, I'm often finding myself wishing that it was somebody else, so I could just kind of get lost in the pure performance. But
and I think you would be able to. Like it's a solid performance. I think it's very strong work by Samoa Joe. You know,
and he's like his physical work is very funny. Like it is a kind of thankless job because like. The fact that it works means you're like not noticing how hard it must have been to do this type of performance. But like, if you sit and like know the logistics of it, you can't help but just be really impressed by, especially the extended scene. Like the best example of this is not like the violence that happens later on when like they go to like one of the cop stations, but it's like that whole extended spot in. This, I think the second episode in Las Vegas, where he puts on a show, right? And like, there's really like half the episode is like Samoa Joe doing physical comedy, mastered this audio stuff. And it's just, it's probably some of the best work that the show does. Like, even if you don't end up wanting to watch the show and all you do is listen to us talk about it, it is worth looking up clips from this sequence if they exist online, because it's just a fascinating physical, like combination of physical and audio performance that is the, I mean, it's kind of like watching a cartoon, like, so to speak.
It's like
the closest, like, and like, analogy I can come up with, but it's like a cartoon in physical form where like normally it would be like, we see this in superhero movies all the time, right? Where it's like, oh, like a CGI blob, whatever is voiced by somebody. And here it's like, no, like, a really talented comedic actor, Will Arnett, is voicing the physical body of someone else. And
I know. For that reason alone, it's just fascinating to watch.
It is.
How does that work? It's like, you know, cartoon, it's like watching a puppeteer almost, but I know he's not really puppeteering him, but it's like his voice is driving the performance. You know, like Samoa Joe is probably hearing Will Arnett's voice and then like acting accordingly. And it's like, Well, that's just a fascinating thing that you don't get to watch all the time, you know?
It'll be even amazing. We've kind of made the assumption here that he's hearing Will Arnett's voice, but it also wouldn't be shocking to me to learn that he didn't, and that Will Arnett was an actor picked in post to be like added. Like, I'm going to try and I would love to look this up later, because if that's not the case, in some ways, I hope it's the case that he was not hearing Will Arnett, because it makes the performance even more like impressive. Where he's just like,
sure.
Hey man, this is what we're going for. Like, are there like
you hear someone reading Will Arnett's lines in like monotone off screen,
just off screen, like,
you know? Oh, I can't wait to go on a killing spree. You know, I don't know. It's got to be Will Arnett's. I think it's got to be Will Arnett's voice, but we'll see. We'll probably be able to find out. I am baffled at this choice that they've made with this character named played by Stephanie Beatrice, called Quiet in the show.
Mm-hmm.
So when you first meet Quiet, she's mute. She doesn't speak. And I'm watching this thinking to myself, oh great, yet another one of these TV shows with a silent sidekick, you know, like like we haven't seen that before. And then like in episode two, she just randomly starts speaking, but then they still call her Quiet.
Yeah,
it's like, say what you will about the tenets of making your sidekick silent, but at least it's an ethos. Like, I literally was like, what are they even doing? Like, it almost feels like they changed their mind. They're like, they started making the show and they're like, oh, it'd be so cool if this woman didn't speak at all. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh, well, that doesn't work at all. That's not working. It's not working. We have to change it so that she starts speaking. Okay, great. We've done that. Oh, but her name is still Quiet. Well, I guess we'll just leave that part in. What is going on, Patrick?
Well, I think, and also my issue with it is there's no character justification for it, right? It's like at the point that we're at in the show, she's no longer acting this way.
Right.
And I guess they want you to assume that because of the trauma she experiences with like her brother. But she's quiet at that point already. It doesn't work at all.
And then like, she gets branded, and then she makes this like very like whimpery sound. And so I'm like, oh wow, they're really committing to this part about her being quiet all the time. And then they just changed it all of a sudden, but they kept the name Quiet.
Yeah. Maybe another shoe will drop like later in the show that like, but then it's too late. Like if they were going to explain this and give us like an interesting justification, like I feel like,
They give us a whole backstory for Officer Stone that we didn't need,
right?
You know, like, but it's like one of them, you know, one of the protagonists. Forget about it. It makes it feel like they're just making it up as they go along, like slapdashedly putting the show together, in my opinion. But I don't know. Like, maybe I'm the only person bothered by it. Like, if I didn't bring it up, would you have even thought to talk about it?
No. It was definitely like I found it to be a very odd character and acting choice, especially because all it results in is like Anthony Mackie talking more and then getting upset at himself it's just odd. Like I think they were trying to play it as a bit, and I think that bit expires like long before they choose to drop it. Like I think that's actually probably what happened. It's like I think it's less about like a radical character shift in the middle of filmmaking as much as like, oh, like this will be funny. And it's like, well, yeah, maybe like for a little bit during that sequence, like with where they first meet Sweet Tooth and like, should she trust him? Yada, yada. But then,
Don't call the character Quiet. Like that doesn't make any sense.
Right. Right.
It reminds me of like in Rush Hour 1 when Jackie Chan pretends he can't speak English for a little bit. And then it's he can't speak. Oh, what a reveal twist. But that's like, that's like within 15 minutes of you meeting the character, you know, it's not like,
yes.
I think it's drawn out for like an episode or two, basically, in the show.
It's too long. It's too long, for sure.
Okay. So any other thoughts about the first five episodes? Oh, one thing I wanted to mention about Quiet before we move off the topic is one thing I thought was really hilarious. I think in general, TV shows should spend more time allowing characters to hang out.
Mm-hmm.
And they often don't do that. And I think that's kind of a problem. But this show does take the time to let the characters hang out a little bit. I don't find any of the characters particularly pleasant. So like it's not great, but I like the what they're trying to do. And there's a scene at the movie theater where they kind of share a little bit about their backstories and they watch Blank Man on the screen. And it's kind of a nice scene. And then there's a shot of Anthony Mackie washing his clothes and his back is to quiet. And Anthony Mackie is an incredibly attractive individual, you know? But the shot that they chose of him was really unflattering.
And, yeah, I was like,
I had a higher opinion of his ass before they decided to show it. And I just have to assume that given the rest of his shape, you just somehow managed to make his ass look bad. And that just cannot be the case.
It was like the least flattering shot of Anthony Mackie I've ever seen, who I believe is a very like fit cut person. And then it's supposed to be like, from Quiet's POV of you're like, ooh, she's like kind of attracted to him, but it's like this grossly unflattering shot. So basically like every now and then in the show, there's just going to be this thing where I'm like, what is, there's like a whole other kind of type of human making this show basically. And that's, that's inherently interesting, you know? Okay. Those are a couple of my topics I wanted to bring up. Patrick, is there anything you want to talk about in regards to the first five episodes?
Yeah, you know, one thing that, you know, we touched on this early on was that I do appreciate the inventiveness of the vehicular stuff because it's not something you see in TV shows all that much. You get car chases, but it's rare to see a show center cars and chases and like that being its primary action scene involving cars. And I do think when they choose to turn it on, it's done pretty like they know, all right, here's the budget. Putting it into these scenes. And I feel like you see that there. Like, I think they're choreographed pretty well. I think they're pretty fun to watch. Like the moments where this show has like heightened kind of cartoonish violence usually is during these scenes. And I've found like when that stuff, well, like quite literally pops, cause it's usually like people's brains popping on screen. Like I have found that to be pretty effective, but I always find it very funny cause it's contrasted with a show that knows those moments have to be few and far between. And when they're there, they have to be good. Like those have to be a highlight of the show, but also the show is desperately trying to find any on off ramp for the cars to do anything but keep going. So like the fact that an entire episode is structured on like big wheelers, like going down the roads together, but they manage to like get the car inside so it can be a largely interior like shot for the episode is just like, you know what? I get what you're doing here. Like that's pretty effective filmmaking is like, we're going to invent these truckers that are going and like, we're just not going to show the truck. It's all interior. Like this is just on a soundstage and we're barely ever going to show the stuff from the outside because it's just not a show that has the budget to pull off. You would then do with that stuff.
We should say, so what Patrick's describing is there's this episode, I think it's episode 4, right?
Yeah.
Where they get picked up by these truckers, and the idea is that they line these trucks up next to each other and extend these tunnels between them.
It's absurd. It's absurd. So funny.
And the trucks keep moving the entire time, but the idea is that they never need to stop, and then like you're in the interior of the truck, and it's like basically like a structure that you can walk around in. And on the one hand, you're right, Patrick, very inventive way to keep the whole episode indoors. On the other hand, makes absolutely no sense. Like, hope to God that you have two lanes of highway consistently.
At all times.
Because if that ever changes, you're ripping off the doors. Like, there's like metal corridors that are extended between these trucks, basically.
It's wild. I mean, like, you know, I think one of the other points I had written down was that there are shows... And I maybe get the sense that this is bothering you more than it is bothering me, but there are shows that get really wrapped up in explaining their world building. And it's like how does this world work? Like, what are the rules? And I guess in an era in which shows through sheer length often feel the need to justify themselves, like there is something kind of charming about Twisted Metal. It's like, yada, yada, yada. Like someone just was in a room and said, like, wouldn't it be cool if, like, these truckers were just, like, connected and they created a bunch of rooms out of it? How does it work? Don't worry about it. Like, it's a cool idea. And, like, it just leaves it at that. And it is one of the charms of the show, I have found at least, like, that every episode is going to have kind of one of those. Like, what's like, what's the bit of the next like group or faction,
right,
and how do they justify their existence out in the world? And like, I'm so much more interested in those kind of outlandish ideas than I am in like seeing another like flashback to like Officer Stone's like traumatic bro like uprising into becoming a super cop.
Officer Stone colonized the Hoover Dam, and it's like, but yeah, there's no, maybe we're gonna get the backstory later, but it's like, it's very possible we won't. We'll just understand, hey, somehow this mall cop was able to convince enough people to come, and then he instituted an extremely elaborate system for feeding them, you know, like all this. It's like, that's the kind of world building that this show doesn't do so far, right?
And that's the stuff that bothers me less, because what's the logic, as much as like, I just don't care. And right, so like, I will throw logic out the window if it's like, if it's a fun idea that is in service of the energy of the show. And I don't think that stuff, it feels way more like, well, we need an antagonist. And it's like, I think the show would have been much better, because I think like, it is at its best when it's just these two characters encountering another faction, solving a problem, and just going on their way. And I can see the show setting down the pieces for, well, Sweet Tooth is going to be a problem. And then like, clearly like, they're probably not done with Officer Stone. Like, I'm sure there's going to be more. And it's like, those are the most least interesting parts of the show. Whereas like, every time they're clearly setting up like the religious factions, like, give me the weird other faction on the road that we're going to meet for 20 minutes.
These holy men that we don't know, but they'll like crucify people basically. And it's like, we don't know what's going on with them. I'm right there with you, Patrick. I don't really care about Officer Stone's backstory. I think if they had just invested in, if it was like Poker Face style, where another Peacock show where it's like these people visiting location to location and solving crimes, you know, like that would have been like probably a better fit for the show. Than trying to make you care about Sweet Tooth or Officer Stone or Stu or any of these other people.
Give me the Sweet Tooth backstory, baby. I can't. You're going to have to play that, because I'm sure it's coming. Like, Sweet Tooth is now a main character, and or at least a high-level sub-character, and I have to imagine we're going to get a flashback. So you played that other one, which means we're going to have to contrast these backstories when we get there.
Because... I don't know. I don't think they're going to give a Sweet Tooth backstory, because it's not... He's not a maybe they might. I don't know. I can't predict. I didn't predict we would get an Officer Stone like entire backstory episode.
We got two of them, right? I think we got two flashbacks for Officer Stone, and one would be enough. One would like the everything up to him going to, you know, take out the quote terrorist. Like, I didn't need that one. Like, the one where he's just the crappy mall cop. I was fine with that one. I think that was an intro to one of the episodes that was like our only glimpse of the very vaguely alluded to, I don't know, electronics stopped working. Again, don't worry about it. We're not like, don't even, like, it's just the premise for the show.
Yeah,
don't think about how that works.
Doesn't make any sense, right? No. Yeah. To your point, I do think they spent most of their vehicle money on the first episode of the show.
Yeah.
Where there's this big chase scene in a mall that actually looks like they went out and did this in a mall, and it actually looks very solid. I enjoyed the fight between Quiet and Officer Stone with the missile going through her back window and all that stuff. That's fun stuff. So yeah, in general, when there's vehicle stuff, it actually looks pretty good. And you're right, they do spend the money there, because a lot of the other stuff looks very dodgy. Like, it looks pretty rough. Example, like the CG background at the Hoover Dam. It looks terrible.
Yeah, you can tell when they're doing something practical, like, and the vehicle stuff feels very practical, like,
right,
on
right.
sets. Like, it doesn't feel like I'm being taken out of it by noticing that I can tell that there's a computer generated background behind there. But all that stuff is like, cut away. They go back to a close up. Like, send me back to Mackie.
It looks like approximately something I David Chen could come up with using Photoshop generative AI beta on my computer. Basically, like, it's like very, very rough. You know, some of the backgrounds look very, very rough.
I'm with you.
And that's what's also kind of like, I'm morbidly fascinated with the show, because some of the stuff looks awesome and then some of it looks not just bad, but like terrible. And so I'm just like, this is whiplash feeling I'm experiencing that no other show gives me. So All right. Well, Patrick, I think that's going to take us to close to the end here, but I will ask you, any predictions as to what is going to happen in the final five episodes? I assume John Doe's, Quiet is alive. I assume John Doe is going to get to New Chicago and pick up the package. And I assume we're going to find out what the package is before the end of the season. But yeah, any idea what the package could be, Patrick? Any speculation?
So the show does not ignore Calypso completely. There is a shot early in Twisted Metal where I believe John Doe is getting on the highway. I don't know, he's driving. And like there is a highway sign and spray painted on it is Calypso is real, which I believe is a reference to graffiti that is in the games. And it's like, because it's not, I forget the lore of Twisted Metal, but like, you know, I don't think Calypso is necessarily like well known by the world. It's like a hidden secret that's why these people enter this tournament. So maybe this is just me like holding out hope that they're going to lean into some of the more outlandish elements of Twisted Metal in the back half. But I'm hoping there'll be, I can't tell if that's Easter egg or like laying down something that they're going to pay off later. It could easily be both. Cause this is a show that has done very heavy handed Easter eggs for like, we know the fans are watching, even though they have not released a Twisted Metal game in like 12 years, like a long time. Like it's like not exactly, which is part of what makes this such a curious adaptation is, or maybe why they did it, right? Where it's like, there is a fan base, but it's not like The Last of Us where there's people sitting down going, don't fuck it up. Like just nobody's doing that for Twisted Metal.
Other than you and me, are like, hey, please don't mess up this adaptation.
But even for me, it's a long leash, right? It's just like, like it's a pretty loose framework.
I'm being sarcastic.
Like,
we don't care.
Yeah. It's just a framework. Like just whatever, like put a clown on a vehicle. So I am wondering if they're going to lean into that. I don't know. So far, I don't get the sense that they're going to lean in the more outlandish element. So I guess my prediction there would be no. And I'm just holding out hope that I'll be wrong on that front. Otherwise, I am predicting the Sweet Tooth backstory. This show has done backstories. And if Sweet Tooth could have been swept off stage, was just the Las Vegas stuff, and they've brought him
it's
back
true.
My guess is going to be some sort of like main antagonist towards the end here. And I think are they gonna make us try and feel bad for Sweet Tooth? I don't know. But I think yes. I think they're gonna try and make us feel bad for Sweet Tooth.
Okay, here we go. Patrick Klepek, I have only watched 5 episodes of Twisted Metal. I'm going to predict for you what is going to happen by the end of the show. Here we go.
Hit me.
Okay. All right, prediction 1. Quiet's still alive, obviously continues to team up with John. They go to New Chicago, they get the weapon. At some point, a big confrontation occurs with Officer Stone that results in Officer Stone dying or getting severely maimed. Sweet Tooth comes in at the last minute and saves John Doe and Quiet from certain death at the hands of Officer Stone, and he is the one who ends up killing Officer Stone. That's my guess. Okay. Prediction number 2. We already know that Neve Campbell's bad because she faked having a baby with that Asian dude. and so my guess is that what she is going to ask him to pick up is some kind of bioweapon.
Yeah.
That exterminates everyone outside of the cities.
What if Calypso is an AI? And that's what she's picking up.
Perhaps. Some kind of weapon that will kill everyone outside the cities. And then like at some point, John Doe and Quiet will find out. And they're going to be like, oh, well, even though we get citizenship here, I don't know if I want to kill all the people that we met outside of the walls. And they prevent her from using the weapon.
Okay? That sounds right.
All right. Boom. I'm calling it now. We'll find out next week when we record our review of the final episodes and the season as a whole. So you can see whether we got this right or wrong. One last observation I wanted to make, Patrick, that I really enjoyed about the show was early on in the show, they get John Doe, like they welcome him into New San Francisco. And he's like, and let me just describe for you what he sees in New San Francisco. Okay. it's like he's going into an outdoor mall in like Orange County area, right? Like,
yep.
That's basically what he is going into. And he sees people like wearing hats and going shopping. And he's like, whoa. And then he goes to Neve Campbell's house and sees there. There was an amazing shot of like what looked to me like a pork tenderloin being burned. And later on, he like flashes back to that shot, like when he's thinking about all the stuff he's like trying to what he's fighting for. But it just struck me, Patrick, that, you know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. And this kind of boring, indistinguishable middle class existence that a lot of people might describe as hellish. Anthony Mackie's character of John Doe is like, whoa, like, I'm willing to risk my life for that. You know, I guess in the post-apocalypse, like, that looks awesome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, like, I was just like, wow, like, this is literally some people's hell that Anthony Mackie is actually aspiring to in the show.
Well, and my what has become like an ongoing like sub bit in the show, and so I look forward to every time a plate of food is put in front of Anthony Mackie His reaction to it every time is like, "Food with seasoning." And it's like and like he does that with the pork chop. He does that when Sweet Tooth makes the surprisingly good like steak that I think is like made from the lions a couple of like floors above, and like every time he responds to some food. I think it's an extension of what you're talking about. It's just like, having like something boring and banal, wouldn't that be the life?
Really puts your whole life into perspective, huh, Patrick?
It does.
You know?
It really does.
Really makes you grateful to be able to record podcasts with a skeleton on your coffee table, you know?
Like, I know. Hey, look, I may be in the boring suburban life, but I got a skeleton on my coffee table behind me. Mm-hmm. So and a 12-foot one outside. So, I try to spice up my boring suburban life.
Well, you can find Patrick Klepek's other work at Remap Radio, available wherever podcasts can be downloaded, and check out his Substack at patrickklepek.substack.com. And of course, check out more episodes of this podcast at podcast.decodingtv.com. Let us know what you thought of Twisted Metal. decodingtv@gmail.com. Consider becoming a paid member at decodingtv.com to support this podcast. He is Patrick Klepek. I am David Chen. Until next time, we're covering the rest of the season of Twisted Metal. We'll see you later. Goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.